You are a busy entrepreneur architect. You're hustling to find the next project, meet with clients, keep the bills paid, and if you're lucky, find some time to design. So how do you continue to learn what you need to know to grow? How do you find the information and the training you need to be more efficient, more effective, more successful? I know you're busy because I'm an entrepreneur architect too. That's why we built the Entree Architect membership. On the first Wednesday of every month, we invite an expert into the academy, and they teach us about one specific topic on how to succeed at business. 60 minutes every month, live training and Q&A. And then you can get right back to work. And when you're a member, you'll gain access to so much more. Unlimited access to business resources, a comprehensive video library, and a private member forum with hundreds of entrepreneur architects just like you. Everything you need to build a better business is available right now at Entree Architect. Register today at entrearchitect.com/join. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 290. And this week, building an innovation platform with Nels Long, senior designer at Roto Architects and co-founder at Roto Lab. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAD, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more at rcat.com, and FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. Nels Long, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're here. This is going to be an interesting conversation. We met in Las Vegas at the convention. You were doing a presentation for, what was the name of that program again? Do you remember?
It was the Practice Innovation Lab.
Practice Innovation Lab, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was 2.0. It was the second iteration of the lab that they were doing, kind of looking at the future of the architectural practice and what some of the things are that people are doing today to kind of push the evolution and the innovation within the discipline.
Yeah, it was a very interesting presentation. It was multiple sessions, and I sat through all of them, and I love that subject. So I wish the entire conference was that. And so, and your presentation was very interesting, and what you're doing was very interesting. And so I wanted to invite you on the show to share what you're doing with the audience. And so I want to have that conversation.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. And so let me give you a little brief intro. Nels Long is a designer, strategist, and an educator with a passion for projects that seek to improve the world through a relationship between technology and the built environment. As a senior designer at Roto Architects, Nels has worked on projects at numerous scales, from single-family homes and commercial spaces to large civic projects and master plans. In many cases, he has served as project manager from very early on in the project, providing entitlements, team selection, project scheduling, task coordination, and delivery. And in each project, he seeks to expand the definition of practice through integration of technology and operational strategies. And he's doing a lot of interesting things over at Roto. And so I wanted him to come here and talk to us about some of those interesting things. But before we dive into Roto Lab and what's Roto Lab doing, I want to know more about you, Nels. I want you to go back to your origin. Where did you discover architecture? What inspired you to become an architect? Share that story to where you are today.
All right. Well, thank you for that intro. My origin story is a little different than most of the architects that I've spoken to. I didn't grow up, you know, sketching, you know, plans and playing with Legos and, you know, any one of a number of the stories that you often hear. My path to architecture was through music. I always thought I would be a rock star one day. And I play guitar and a number of other instruments, and I spend a lot of time around, you know, other people, other musicians, and I ended up working for a recording studio when I was in high school. And part of working at the recording studio was we built out a new control room and ended up having to do calculations on the acoustics, and I kind of started thinking that, you know, maybe one application of my interest in music would be designing spaces in which music could be recorded or performed, and that's kind of what got me into architecture school was through the acoustic side. Once I got into architecture school, that I was just immediately immersed in an entire world that I really knew nothing about, and there's, you know, as we all know, many paths within architecture that you can go down, whether that's, you know, sustainability or algorithmic computational design and so forth, all of which I kind of dabbled in along the way to where I am now, which is starting to kind of look at some of the, we call it excursions into alternative practice, you know, starting to look at some of the ways of expanding the definition of scope for architects, and starting to really do a deep dive into programming on the front end, and also looking at how, as architects, we can stay involved in a project longer and actually start to have some opportunity to consult and be involved in the business planning and the operational strategy of the spaces that we develop.
Well, that's why I wanted you here, because that I find that super interesting. I love talking about going beyond traditional practice. You know, sitting behind a computer, having a client hire you to design a building, you design the building, you provide the drawings for it, you oversee the construction and the building gets built, and then you're on to the next project, right? That's traditional, the traditional model. I think there is a vast opportunity for architects beyond that. And, and using the skills and the knowledge and the talents we have as architects and as designers, the way we've been educated and the way we think differently than most people in the world, there are so many things we can do with our skills. And so I love that that's how you're approaching architecture. And so how are you doing that? What are you doing that's different than a traditional practice?
So, you know, there's a lot of different ways, but for simplicity's sake and for the sake of this conversation, I'd like to kind of discuss three ways in particular that we're doing that. So I'll name those three ways, and then we can kind of go into each and talk about it and kind of range back and forth. The first one is, Michael and I founded Roto Lab as a sort of research and development engine within Roto Architects, but you know, as a separate entity about 5 years ago. And Roto Lab is really designed as an incubator. So a lot of times we'll get involved with a particular client or a particular organization on the architectural side, and we quickly realize that there are options that client doesn't is not aware of that has more long-term effects. Sometimes we will include those options into the design, you know, package for them, but if they're not interested, sometimes we take those lessons and we actually we'll build out a company and we'll put together a team and we'll incubate that concept as a startup. And so we're borrowing a lot of our processes from the startup world, which is one way that we're able to have, you know, total control of a project, you know, even beyond what a development company would, because it's actually, it's a corporation that we've founded, that we've put, you know, team members in place within. We have a full business plan that covers everything from, you know, revenue and operations and marketing to, you know, concept design and the spaces and the programming for it. And so one of those companies that we've launched is Affinity Space, which I'll go into a little bit more later. The second approach that we are actively pursuing is consulting, but consulting to municipalities, cities, small towns, and putting together research documents for them based on, analysis and reports for them based on our research of their the potentials that exist within their city or within their region that might respond to the education system, it might respond to the mobility networks, it might respond to the opportunity for an infusion of cultural infrastructure, and we'll actually speak to potential investors, potential partners, and put together a full package. So it's not just here's a report. Do what you will with it. Good luck raising money. Here's our concept of what you can do to attract new business or new residents or whatever the challenge is that particular city has. And here are the people to kind of make that happen. And then finally, through our architecture work at Roto Architects, we often will. In the contract negotiation phase, try to establish a relationship with the client where we are involved beyond traditional scope, either staying on as a consultant through the operations phase or, building out the contract so that a certain amount of our fee is either an ownership stake or a stock option within the company so that we begin to have a more long-term relationship with our clients.
So how did all three of these are pretty unique. Even the consulting, the way you're approaching consulting is unique. Where did these three ideas come from and where did you pursue them from? I mean, where did the ideas come from?
So Michael and I both teach at SciArc here in LA, and a lot of the ideas are generated through the courses that we've developed to be taught at SciArc. And so SciArc becomes a bit of a staging ground for the work that we take into practice. The rest of them tend to be born out of necessity. So we often have clients who are very early in the project phase. Maybe they don't have any funding yet. Maybe they're trying to put together some concept graphics in order to secure some funding. Maybe they just want to talk to somebody about what their options are. Michael has a long history of working with nonprofit organizations and cultural organizations and things like that. And so over the years, we've just kind of started working this way out of necessity in order to bring in projects and build our network and build our community. And as we do each in turn, we've kind of subtly begin to look at how we expand our scope into these different areas just based on our personal interests.
So it's looking for those opportunities while you're working with clients and then pursuing them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which I think a lot of architects, while they're working with clients, see those opportunities and just assume that that's not part of their scope. And they just let them float past.
And I think that's one of the things that as architects, we are going to need to be better at as we move forward, which is continuing to evolve your practice, continuing to grab on to those concepts as they float past, because we're starting to see a world that is dominated by three-dimensional space, specifically in the virtual realm, that is not designed by architects. The majority of the three-dimensional environments that we're in are designed by game designers or production designers or art directors of some sort, many of which did go to architecture school. But I feel like the architectural community has a lot to offer media and specifically the three types that I just named. As we as that becomes more and more the case, you know, for example, I'm working in 3GS at the moment, which is a tool that can be used to create 3D spaces within web browsers. And I anticipate it's just a number of years before the majority of the internet is spatial. And as that trend, you know, continues, the role of architects to affect change on our virtual environment changes, you know, and becomes more important along with it. So, you know, as the AEC market evolves, the role for architects is going to change. And I think we need to be very active at looking outwards into the world and see where else our specific skill sets are applied.
Yeah, I agree. Did the architecture firm, did that come first, and then the consulting and the lab come later, or was it in a different order?
So Michael founded Roto Architects in 1991 as his practice specifically focused on providing architectural services to nonprofit organizations, and he's done a lot of work with Tibetan Buddhists, and you know, we're doing a project right now for an organization called Wolf Connection up in Acton, California, which is a youth empowerment program that does a lot of work with inner city kids by bringing them out to the ranch and allowing them to learn from a 25-member wolf pack on social orders and responsibilities and things like that. It's a really amazing organization that you should all check out if you're interested. It's called Wolf Connection. And so, you know, a lot of the focus of the firm early on was, you know, providing the types of consulting and architectural insight into those types of organizations while still doing, you know, traditional projects, houses and schools and museums and libraries and things like that. But you know, again, through education, you know, Michael is very vocal about the fact that he is equally an architect and an educator. He began to explore some of these options, and he was looking at video games and the power that video games have to teach when I was in graduate school at SciArc. And that, you know, I took his studio where we were designing game spaces. And that was kind of the beginning of our relationship, and through my experience with both playing games and making games, we began to venture out into this alternative practice and start to look at other ways in which we could affect the architectural discipline and practice.
Did the lab come before the consulting?
I would say that the consulting kind of comes out of the lab. So yeah, it does. You know, it's not a separate entity. We do a number of things out of RotoLab, and it's basically a way for us to express all of our interests outside of the architectural practice. So the architectural practice can remain pure in a certain sense and not get muddied up with all the experimentation that we're doing within the lab.
Yeah, I believe that architects, if they brought, you know, if the architecture community, the network of the brain power within the community comes together, because of the way we think and because of the way we approach problems, could solve a lot of the major problems we have on this planet. It's just a matter of figuring out how to network those minds.
Exactly.
So what you're doing with RotoLab and the consulting is sort of a microcosm of that bigger idea.
That's exactly correct. And we are even taking it one step further, where, you know, RotoLab was really established to explore cross-sector work. And so we have what we call our satellite team, which are domain experts from, you know, many different sectors, from kind of what you would expect an architect to work with, you know, real estate brokers and developers and things like that. But we have a number of writers and documentarians and composers, product designers. You know, we have a neuroscientist that we work very closely with. We have a specialist in intellectual property and patenting that we work very closely with. And we do a lot of work with Alex McDowell and his world building team at Experimental Design. And so we're, you know, as well as a network of architects that we're closely connected to. And I think that's one thing that separates Roto Architects from at least any of the other places that I've worked, which is that we're very open to share commissions and share projects with other architects if it means that we get to kind of learn from the process. And so being collaborative within the discipline as well as, you know, within the consultants that we bring on, and really starting to kind of build that hive mind to begin to affect change in some of these key impact areas. You know, in California right now, we're seeing such a huge rise in homelessness. And it, you know, to me, I have kind of a special perspective on it. Well, it's not special or unique really, but you know, I have my perspective on it as a 30-year-old that is going through the process of trying to buy a home in California, and just the complexities in the path to home ownership and kind of the way that, you know, my generation is really kind of stuck in the renter mode, at least in California. And so starting to think about how, as architects, can we begin to simplify the path to home ownership, and, you know, whether that's through the creation of new modular products or something like that, or a portal with information to, you know, different options, or, you know, I think there are a lot of key challenges, key impact areas that, you know, the network of architects and, you know, beyond architects into, you know, video games and robotics and neuroscience and kind of some of the other core domains that we collaborate with can come together and solve some of these large problems.
Yeah, I totally agree. I that's something that on a personal level, I see Entree Architect and the community that's growing around Entree Architect, which is all small firm architects. So they're all sole practitioners and owners of small firms. I see the opportunity and the potential of what that community can bring to the world as we coalesce and start to be intentional about approaching some of these issues through the community.
Exactly. Yeah, I really respect that intention, and I'm happy to see that it's getting the audience that you have.
We will come right back to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, Arcat, and FreshBooks. If you work with specifications in your firm, you probably have come across outdated manufacturer specs with confusing notes, products that no longer exist, or maybe even companies that no longer exist. Maybe you even pay for specifications. Do you do that? Stop. There's a better way to find manufacturer specifications for your project documentation. It's Arcat. Arcat.com. Arcat is the number one most used website for finding building product information and has a free library with over 1,400 up-to-date accurate specifications. 1,400 up-to-date accurate specifications. Arcat's specs are written by FCSI, CCS, and AIA professionals based on manufacturers' data. Use Arcat's powerful search engine to find the right specifications for your project and quickly download them into multiple formats for free. Google can't do that. You don't even have to register. Go now to arcat.com. That's arcat.com, ARCAT.com, and start building better content today. Do you remember when you started your small firm? It was not easy. It took lots of late nights, early mornings, and maybe even the occasional all-nighter. Bottom line, you have been insanely busy ever since. So why not make things a little bit easier for yourself? Well, our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners like us. It's simple, intuitive, and keeps you way more organized than that dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. Create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds. and then get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part? FreshBooks grows alongside your business, so you'll always have the tools that you need when you need them without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it for free for 30 days. No catch, no credit card. Free for 30 days. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. That's entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. Arcat and FreshBooks. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So Rotolab, you were talking about how Rotolab, you do research and you do development, but it's structured as an incubator. And so some of these ideas turn into companies, which I love that idea, that it's a business model approach, that you know, not just not research and development, but you're actually taking it to the next level and creating companies that can have an impact in the world. One of these is Affinity Space, which is you mentioned that early on. Can you explain what Affinity Space is and sort of use it as an example of what the Rotolab is doing?
Sure. And that's a perfect example to kind of talk about our primary focus, which is programming. And so often programming is kind of thought as something that's done before an architect gets involved. You know, it's the project brief that you're handed and you kind of have to respond to it. And we've really incorporated it into our concept design phase. That really comes, Affinity Space really comes out of that interest in new types of programming and specifically looking at the creation of multimodal spaces that are specifically designed to support informal learning. So Affinity Space is a term that was developed by Dr. James G. At Arizona State University, who we do a lot of work and collaboration with, spaces where people come together around a shared affinity for a specific experience or specific pastime. So specifically, video games is his focus. And if you look at the affinity space that exists for the World of Warcraft, for example, it's one of the largest online repositories of information that exists. The Wikipedia on Azeroth, which is the main world, is as large as like all the other Wikipedia articles combined. And it's really about creating these social groups. And so that, you know, as architects, you know, that begs the question, what's the physical equivalent of that? And what is the, you know, what should the focus be? So Affinity Space is a company that we built. It's a location-based entertainment concept similar to an escape room. Escape rooms are an example of location-based entertainment. But at Affinity Space, we're really looking at creating hybrid multimodal experiences that support informal learning through the combination of brain training and neuroscience influence and neuroscience based activities that have been shown to increase memory capacity, reasoning skills, so forth, with games based learning and that leads people to impactful professions and STEAM concentrations through games that already exist. That allow you to basically learn how to develop your own game or learn how to do 3D modeling or learn how to do some of these other key skill areas and actually get industry certification from various organizations with health and wellness and makerspaces and kind of bringing each of these different programs together in a way that may seem kind of complicated and kind of like there's too much, you know, stuff in the too many ingredients in the pot. But what we're really seeking to achieve is a a very specific diversity of programs within a space such that people or a membership bounces between them, constantly being stimulated by a different experience and constantly learning as they're within the space. So last year we founded a corporation to actually take this concept out into the world. We've brought on an operations team and a marketing team, and we're in the process of securing our first location. We have a whole, whole business plan put out, and we're, we're working with a group out of UCLA to develop our own pedagogical framework for how these experiences are curated and how they're scaffolded and built out into experience models or phenomenons that can be used to build coursework around, and so on and so forth. So it's a whole product line. It's a whole development strategy that we are in the process of developing.
How is it funded? Is it internally funded, or do you have outside investors?
Both. The majority of the work is bootstrapped out of Rotolab, and we are working on a site-by-site basis with private investors to secure locations and actually do the build-out.
So the team that you've put together, are they being compensated through investment, or are they taking equity, or how do you get that team in place?
We've been very lucky to find people who are interested in collaborating for collaboration's sake. Mm-hmm. And everyone understands that the work that they're doing now leads them, or gives them the opportunity to have a place long term. And we do have sweat equity agreements with the majority of our collaborators. It's such an interesting topic, and it's, I keep saying that this is something that is going to happen with or without us, and so I'd rather it happen with us. And I feel like a lot of people have that mindset where they just want to be involved as we go into this next stage of experience design and informal learning and education design and kind of all of that they're willing to kind of figure it out later. And we're very open with everybody about the fact that this is something we're bootstrapping and we're figuring it out as we go, and we're shouldering a lot of the risk, and a lot of people are willing to take on some of that risk to be part of it, and we're very thankful for that.
Yeah. So it's an exciting idea. It's an innovative idea. And so people who have that same passion that you have for creating such an idea are willing to put in some time and some effort and some of their own equity to make it happen. And then once it happens, then everybody benefits from it in some other way.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the target market for a space like that, are they kids, or are they young adults, or are they everybody?
We'd like to think everybody. Unfortunately, if you say that in a pitch or a fundraising meeting, you're immediately shown the door. We are targeting the kind of 12 to 30 year old mm-hmm. Age frame specifically. Although we see a huge opportunity for this to scale out specifically in the specifically into the young professional space and the academic space. So the affinity space as an after-school program for college students that want to have a social space to engage in experience with these types of technologies that we're discussing, a laboratory space for professors or other types of researchers who need a space outside of their academic institution or outside of their home to kind of explore some of these options, almost looking at it as a type of co-working space or a type of shared communal workspace where people can come together and develop their own concepts and their own ideas in collaboration with the community. And one of the things that we've been doing to kind of explore that is we have a staff writer that specializes in science fiction, and we've been kind of exploring the concept through a fictional tale of two people that use that are members of an affinity space in the future, that are kind of looking back in time to its origin and trying to explore the beginnings of the affinity space. And using that narrative device, we've really begun to kind of explore the different types of membership and options that exist within that.
It's so exciting to talk to you about this. The creativity that goes into something like this, and the possibilities and the opportunities that you're exploring, I hope inspires those who are listening, because I think that there are a lot of architects out there that feel the way you're feeling, get excited about an idea, passionate about an opportunity that could change the world, the way people think and the way they work and the way they play. But they don't think that they can take it to the next step, right? They just have this idea and it just sits in their brain gnawing away, right? And they never pursue it. And I'm hoping that this conversation might inspire and motivate some of the listeners to take that next step. Do you have any recommendation or some advice for those of us who have those ideas? Maybe we don't know how it gets funded. Maybe we don't know what the next step is. But what is the next step we should take after we have that idea that could never work idea? What do we do? How do we take it to the first step?
Well, that's it's a very complex question, and it has a necessarily complex answer. I believe that we are in an age of platforms, and many people think of platforms as digital platforms. But I think if we start looking at our world as a stack, to quote Benjamin Bratton, and start thinking about the impact that our decisions make on the system, and how we can leverage that platform to move beyond our current situation, that we can begin to expand the definition of our role in society in a way that is in keeping with our tradition. And so, more simply put, building community around those ideas, and if you have a concept or you have an idea that isn't applicable to your day job, maybe try and find somebody who shares that affinity with you, and start a Slack channel, or start a meetup, or find ways to build that discussion into your routine. I was extremely fortunate to, come to grad school with some ideas and immediately find a professor who not only shared those ideas, but also an infrastructure to develop it out. And that was in large part luck on my part, but there are opportunities that can be sought out for those that are interested in community building and in discussion. Where information is so readily accessible today that finding people that share an affinity with you is relatively simple. And so I would encourage you to build that into your routine.
Great advice. When you talk about platforms and community, those really go hand in hand, right? I mean, you can have a platform, but if there's no community to experience it or to engage within that platform or among that platform, then the platform is worthless. But at the other side, if you have a community but no platform, it's just a bunch of people talking. And so the two things together are so important. And the first step in doing that is to find the first person who's interested in what you're interested in, right? Because a community starts with two people, and then those two people turn into four people, and those four people turn into eight people, and then it just grows and grows and grows and grows. And then the platform is there to support all of these people who come together around this one specific affinity or idea or platform. And then you have, you know, momentum, right? You have this community and this platform that supports the communal idea, and the momentum takes you to where you want to go.
Yeah, I think that's stated very well. Thank you.
The reason I can state it that way is because Entree Architect, I look at Entree Architect as that platform, that the platform is Entree Architect, and the community are small firm architects who are all looking for answers in solutions to business and leadership and life. And so before there was Entree Architect, there was no platform. There was a community, right? There were thousands of architects, but there was no place for them to gather as a community of entrepreneur architects. And so just by creating the platform, just by creating the original blog attracted people around that idea of becoming an entrepreneur architect or an architect interested in successfully building a business. And it just kept growing and growing and growing. And I see when I talk about bringing that network of ideas and brains together, I see that community of architects being able to solve some of the world's problems as this community grows and as this platform gets built out. We can have significant major global impact on the world as architects by just creating a platform and a network of people.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree, and it's always so refreshing to hear other people hear from other people that think the same way. And you know, as soon as architects realize that they can run for president, I think we're going to start seeing some real substantial change in the way that the world is invented. And you know, that there are a lot of people that call themselves world builders, but you know, architects have been doing it for a long time. And you know, we all share the affinity for building our world and imagining new options and new concepts for the way that world is presented. And it's really exciting. And I'm thankful for the work that you do at Entree Architect. And I'm hopeful that vision is something I get to see in my lifetime.
Oh, you will. You will, no doubt. And I appreciate you sharing some background on Rotolab and Roto Architects, because I think it's inspirational and motivational for those who have those ideas and are afraid to take the next step. You can see that in two examples, that just by taking the next step is the first step. So, Nels, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you the one question that I ask everybody. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
You know, I believe that our power is in collaboration. So maybe next time you get a commission or you get a project, sharing that commission or that project with another firm or with a group that's outside of your specialty, or bring in a consultant that is outside of your typical your typical consulting base. Talk to a scientist, or talk to an educator, or talk to someone from one of the media or entertainment fields, and begin to see how you can bring multiple perspectives in. And really focus on increasing the amount of collaboration that you offer through your practice.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that idea. If you want to check out what Nels and the team are doing over at Roto Architecture, it's Rotoarch with a K, rotoark.com. If you want to see what Roto Lab is doing, it's rotolab.la. They're active on social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. We'll have links to everything on the show notes. Nels, I really appreciate you spending some time. I know you're busy. I appreciate you taking a few minutes out to share what you guys are doing over at Roto Architecture and Roto Lab. and for sharing your knowledge and inspiring and motivating some of the architects here at Entree Architect.
It's been my pleasure, Mark. Thanks so much.
So there you go. That was episode 290, counting down to episode 300. 300's coming, right? I cannot believe that we're coming up on 300 episodes of Entree Architect Podcast. And every week, this audience is growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So thank you. Thank you for sharing this podcast with your friends. I cannot do this by myself. This growth has not happened because of me. This is an amazing community, and we're growing this community together, the Entree Architect community, this community of knowledge and support and encouragement and inspiration and motivation. It's your community. And truthfully and sincerely, I'm honored to be a member. So thank you for sharing this in every episode with your friends. The link for today's episode with Nels Long of RotoLab is entrearchitect.com/episode290. That's entrearchitect.com/episode290. Please share it with someone who you know who may find some value or inspiration from what Nels and his teams at RotoLab and Affinity Lab or Affinity Space, what those guys are doing. I think it's so interesting and motivational. So entrearchitect.com/episode290, please share it. And if you're looking for a simple, efficient way to learn what you need to know to grow, then join the hundreds of other entrepreneur architects who have already registered at Entree Architect Membership. It's built for you. 60 minutes every month, live training and Q&A. Then you can get back to work. Join us today at entrearchitect.com/join. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.